CBSI on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From Washington, the President of the United States greeted Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson of Sweden and President Sauli Niinistö of Finland at the White House. Handshakes, laughter, as they met for trilateral conversations on the NATO Mutual Defense Pact, as well as broader European security concerns. This from the Associated Press within these last hours. The presenting issue is that both Finland and Sweden have applied to NATO, to join NATO. The process can take many months, up to a year. However, at this moment, it is in train. There are details, but I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft to observe this moment, this gathering at the White House, as how it is viewed in Moscow at the Kremlin, given the argument that Vladimir Putin made in his speech on Victory Day that Russia was responding to an attack by NATO on Russia and that this was an existential crisis and Russia must fight. It has no choice. Anatole, a very good evening to you. Showing these images on Russian television, you have to think as the opponents think in any conflict. Does this validate Vladimir Putin's explanation? Does this validate, in fact, that they are fighting a war to preserve Russia, not to conquer Ukraine?
Well, I mean, you could read it the other way and say that through invading Ukraine, Putin, of course, has produced something which, you know, he said the invasion of Ukraine was intended to prevent, which was the further expansion of NATO. Before the war, one of Putin's key demands was that NATO should scale back new deployments in Eastern Europe. Well, now he himself has produced, you know, two more important members for NATO. So objectively speaking, of course, this is another very severe failure by Putin. But undoubtedly, when talking to the Russian people, he will try to spin this as another, you know, example of NATO aggression and expansionism.
The Finnish component is most striking to me. I learned that there's been a treaty between the Soviet, now Russia, and Finland since my birth, 1948, and that Finland stayed out of the Cold War side choosing, even though there was a serious, always serious threat of nuclear conflict. Joining now is striking. It's also striking that it's going to overwhelm or at least press Russia's ability to defend itself, Murmansk, the Northern Fleet. And Finland is going to pay a price as well. It's not just energy that Finland depends on. They use the port of Petersburg for their trade. And so, therefore, Finland is actually going to participate in a way that is not going to benefit Finland, but it's part of the larger story of NATO presenting a face. However, I want to look forward to what this face represents. The camps are arming. The battle lines are being drawn. I'm trying to imagine, Anatole, what the future is for Russia and Europe. Are we looking at, a permanent division, a return to Cold War? Or how do you see this matter in 5 years or 10 years?
Well, I think we're definitely back in the Cold War. I mean, a couple of things to say on that score, though. I mean, one is, remember that when the previous Cold War was launched, the Soviet Union had the finest army in the world, the army that had beaten Nazi Germany, stationed in the middle of Germany and ruling over the greater part, not just of Eastern Europe and the Balkans, but of Central Europe. Now we are talking about battles in Eastern Ukraine, an area that during the Cold War would have been considered on the very periphery of Europe. So we shouldn't forget, I mean, just how far NATO has expanded and just how much stronger the West is today than it was during the Cold War. The other thing is that, of course, the Finns signed the neutrality treaty with the Soviet Union because they had been attacked by the Soviet Union in 1939, and then they'd sided with Nazi Germany from 1941 to 1944, and a treaty of neutrality was part of the price of getting out of that. But, you know, ever since, first the Soviets and then the Russians have observed the terms of that treaty of neutrality, there haven't been any military threats to Finland. Putin, you know, really none at all. There's been no threat of a Russian invasion of Finland or an attack of any kind. Putin, while he clearly obviously doesn't like at all Finland and Sweden joining NATO, he hasn't threatened Russian military retaliation against this, clearly because he, you know, understands that they have always been part of the West in real terms. And secondly, there's nothing he can do about it anyway. So that in a way, of course, I mean, one understands why the Finns and the Swedes are doing this, given the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But it is also, from their point of view, actually quite pointless. They are not facing a threat of Russian attack.
The Economist magazine, a leader in these last hours about worldwide famine. I mention this because it's a cost of Ukraine war continuing. The artillery war has settled down to a slug match, and the NATO forces are going to resupply Ukraine as long as it desires. Also, the U.S. is voting on billions and billions to flow into Ukraine. So at least now it appears that Kyiv can sustain this conflict along the eastern border. However, the famine is not going to wait for peace talks. The famine is right now, the numbers are staggering, said to be 250 million, climbing to more than a billion people in time. Do you, in Europe, see the leadership cognizant of this, that delaying a peace settlement in Ukraine puts the least among us at risk, North Africa, the Indian Ocean basin, and there'll be shortages in Europe as well?
Yes, I mean, I think that European governments are definitely more aware of this than the United States. Somewhat surprisingly, in a way, because after all, key U.S. allies in the Middle East and North Africa are also intensely threatened. You know, Egypt, overwhelmingly dependent on wheat imports. Algeria, the states of West Africa and the Sahel. I think that one can already begin to see the European leaders starting to call for an early ceasefire and peace negotiations, while the word coming out of Washington is much more about helping the Ukrainians to win and defeating and weakening Russia. To judge by my conversations with the Germans in particular, they will continue to support America for some time yet. But if this war is still going on in the autumn, you know, when the Germans will be facing a winter of energy shortages and greatly increased energy prices, then I think one might see much greater European pressure for an attempt at a ceasefire and peace settlement.
And to remind everyone, there is a document that exists or an understanding that exists that has been ignored at least as long as the war has been going on, but probably years, Minsk II. Remind everyone what that would look like, Anatole.
Minsk II, which the Germans and French brokered in 2015, basically lays down the return of the Donbass separatist areas to Ukraine under conditions of full autonomy. That was the only way in which that conflict could be ended. The Ukrainians, however, refused to implement Minsk II. They refused to guarantee permanent autonomy for the Donbass. In principle, I mean, at least one could return to negotiations along the lines of Minsk II as part of a peace settlement, because the Ukrainian government said previously, at least, that it was willing to compartmentalize the territorial issues and basically leave them for future diplomatic negotiation. So that might be a way of heading towards at least a provisional ceasefire and the beginnings of a peace settlement.
And getting the grain out of the Black Sea basin.
Well, indeed. And, you know, when talking to to Indians about why, you know, India has stayed neutral in this conflict and has not joined sanctions. You know, Indian friends have pointed out to me, you know, in the run-up to the war, no apparent consideration whatsoever was given by Western leaders to the interests of poorer countries around the world and the impact on them of higher food prices. That simply played no role in Western calculations. And so the Indians say, well, look, basically, you know, you didn't give a damn about our interests. Why should we follow yours?
India has stopped exporting wheat right now, preparing for what the leader in The Economist says is worldwide famine upon us. Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.